Good morning, everybody. I'd like to call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's 7 minutes after 9 a.m. Wednesday, February 18th, 2009. With me today is Co-Chair Senator Hoffman, Senator Ellis, Senator Olson,
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Elton, Senator Huggins, and Senator Thomas, and myself, Senator Stedman. So we have a full committee today. We're going to continue our discussion today that we began last week on the CBR. We'll probably have this back a couple other times dealing with related issues that we revolve around mainly. We'll deal with some statute language and some other things coming up, which we haven't even started yet. But I think there's some work that we need to do in that direction over the next couple months. We're going to postpone further discussion on the 09 supplemental budget until a later date. We want to have time to see that the governor's released today in the way of what amendments before we go further into that appropriation bill, because there's probably going to be some significant alterations in revenue forecasts along with most likely expenditure levels. Last week we left off, we ran out of time, and I believe we were discussing the sequence of events last year that led to some decisions that to invest the surplus of the CBR balance. And for those watching at home, the CBR, the Constitutional Budget Reserve, is our main savings account. It takes a three-quarter vote of the legislature to access. It's got two component parts. One is the main account, and the other one is referred to as a sub-account. And the sub-account size and investment strategies significantly different than the main account. So we're going to continue that discussion. I want to remind members that if they'd like to refer to them during the morning discussions, these are the main accounts and the sub-accounts. There's data in your packet. A single page from SB 256, which is the 08 supplemental bill that shows the CBR intent language, was included on lines 6 and 9. And a copy of Alaska Statute 371043, which is a section of statutes that deals with the management of the budget reserve fund, is also in your packet. And we have in attendance with us today the Commissioner of Revenue, Mr. Pat Galvin here, and his trusty assistant, Mr. Jerry Burnett, Deputy Commissioner. And they're going to help us work through this process. And then I've mentioned the Commissioner, and we're going to be looking at some language alterations, so we'll briefly touch on that at the end of the meeting, and we'll pick that portion of this discussion up at a later date once we come up with a proposed language for the committee to review. And with that, Commissioner Galvin, if you could introduce yourself for the record, and of course who you represent, and then kind of we'll just pick up the conversation from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Pat Galvin. I'm Commissioner of Department of Revenue. And with me is Jerry Burnett, Deputy Commissioner.
Okay. We were just handed briefly, there's no authorship on this document, but there's a document handed out to everybody. It's the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund, January 31st, 2009, that all the committee members have. So that's a new document. Could you, because we haven't had time to read it, could you walk us through that document, and then we'll continue our discussion?
Sure. Actually, if you don't mind, I'll have Jerry. Jerry's the one who put this together for us. If you don't mind, I'll have him walk through the various subparts that he asked our staff to put together.
Okay. For the record, Jerry Burnett, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. If you look at this, and this was done by our comptroller in the Department of Revenue, the top line shows the corpus, that is the main account of the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund balance as of the January 31st, 2009, and the line below it in the first column will show the balance of the subaccount as of that same date, January 31st, with a total balance. The next, going across there, will show your performance forecast for those, which the performance forecast for the main account is 4.53% return, and the performance forecast for the subaccount is a 7.61. And then it shows a combined column there showing the balance with the income or the loss to the total and the final, so they should reconcile to each other for the fiscal year 2009.
Could we stop there, Mr. Burnett, and just back up to performance and just remind the committee when those numbers were updated and became effective? Is that first the fiscal year for the coming year of 2009, or when were these forecast numbers?
The forecast numbers are the ones that were done based on capital market projections done in early 2008.
Okay. And
so you can see that performance in 2008 didn't match expectations, or actually for the past 3 years. If you follow down the page then to the account, it shows the main account broken out by
Mr.
its
Chairman,
asset allocation and broad
hold
market. Go ahead.
Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, on the first portion, the three year, is that ending January 31st? That's a 3 year performance for?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman,
yes.
That's a 3 year performance, actual performance for the main account and the sub account.
For 36 months ending December 31st.
Right, or January 31st.
January 31st. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And is that net of fees or gross of fees?
That would be net.
That's net. Okay. And just briefly,
on that,
Senator Hoffman.
So the performance that you have prior to that, that is expected for 12 months, or what time frame are you anticipating?
That is a 5 year. Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, that would be a 5 year expected performance, because we use 5 year projections on the from our capital markets.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, normally when the performance numbers are presented, a lot of times it's a 3, a 5, a 10.
Right.
A 1, and then maybe a fiscal year to date, non-compounded, mm-hmm. of course.
Right.
Less than a year. So some of that data included later on, or?
Mr. Chair, yes, we show actual performance year to date, fiscal year to date. This sheet doesn't have the 5 year performance, but we can,
right.
any schedule you want, we can.
Okay. And then, because again, this is the first time I've seen this document. If we back up to the first couple of columns, you've got a balance column with the main account, the corpus, and the sub account, and you've got a combined column.
Right.
And I see the totals are the same, so help me recognize what I'm looking at here. I'm just confused on the layout.
Okay, the combined column shows the corpus at the beginning of the fiscal year, then with additional cash added and net investment results, and then the total.
Okay, so we don't want to use. Okay. So under corpus sub, and then it should be gain loss, possibly a title or some other.
Right.
Okay. I see you got it on the left.
It's on the right. The right hand side of the column shows what the combined column.
No. Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions on the subaccount. When was the subaccount created?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, I believe the subaccount was created in 2000.
Okay. And then And could you just refresh my memory a little bit? I mean, who makes the determination on how much money is in the subaccount?
Okay. Through the chair, Senator Elton, when the subaccount was created in 2000, there was temporary language in the statute that also directed the Department of Revenue to deposit $400 million to that subaccount. That amount was, there was no other deposits to the subaccount prior to April of 2008. The determination as to how much specifically to put in was made by the Commissioner of Revenue and the Deputy Commissioner working together in 2008 based on discussions and expected future contributions, et cetera. And the commissioner could speak to that.
Can we hold that?
Sure.
In-depth discussion for a little bit later, but we'll.
Absolutely. In fact, that got to the nub of my question, so right. Later's so, fine.
Yeah, there's, okay. We have further question. Go ahead and continue, Mr. Burnett.
Okay, so if we go down to under the second set of lines there where it shows account, balance, asset allocation, that's showing the breakout of the main account first into broad market fixed income, intermediate term fixed income, short term fixed income, showing the percentage asset allocations as of January 31st, 2009.
So that's, if we could stop there, so that is, take the first one, the bond market fixed income, 642. That's the actual 20%, or that's the target?
As of 1/31/09.
And the target's plus or minus 8?
Band.
Right. There's a band, yes. It's 20% plus or minus 8.
Actual 988, okay.
Right.
Again, we haven't had time to walk through this, and there's a lot of data on it.
I understand. Sorry. And then, so if you follow that across, it shows the bands for asset allocation, the actual asset allocation, and the year-to-date income. And I would like to comment on the year-to-date income that since a majority of the contributions to this were made in, you know, later in the fiscal year, with one large one made in actually in December, then that income, even though it's, you know, when you're determining the performance, it's based on the actual amount that was in there at any time rather than the, you know, the beginning total or the ending total. So looking at the income and comparing it to the total won't get you the same results as might be displayed someplace else as a percentage basis because the balance changed through contributions over time.
Timing of your cash flows.
Right. It's a timing issue. Okay. Below that then shows the asset allocation of the sub-account, again as of January 31st, showing the actuals, domestic equity, international equity, conservative aggregate, which is bonds, emerging income fund, which is a bond fund, an international bond fund. The International Fixed Income Fund.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are these the original allocations from 2000, or have they been adjusted? And if so, how often are these allocations adjusted for the corpus and the subaccount?
Okay. Through the chair to Senator Hoffman, it's my understanding, and I haven't done a total research that the asset allocations, the only change to the asset allocation that has been made since 2000 was the addition of the Emerging Income Plus Fund, the International Fixed Income Fund in 2008. And that's a small 1%. Well, the rest of it, the asset allocations have been stable.
Let me restate that. Rebalancing, not so much dealing with the initial allocation targets, but the rebalancing. How did how did you rebalance the portfolio, or when was it done in retrospect of changing market conditions? And the implementation, I guess, if I back up a little bit more, the investment of the looks like 4.4 here. Did that flow into the standard allocation, the 44, the 19, and 36, the targets? And then did you rebalance after that? Or I think that's the question, Senator Hoffman. Mm-hmm.
The Gary Bader, who was here before, Chief Investment Officer, could answer on a more daily basis. But the initial investment of both the transferred amount and the amount that was initially deposited were allocated immediately into this allocation. With regard to the rebalancing, it's my expectation that the Chief Investment Officer is rebalancing continually to get back to the targets anytime that it gets out of balance, and so it would be fairly immediate mechanical rebalancing to the asset allocation.
Because it looks like they're, well, you just take the first one, the 44% to domestic equity, plus or minus 7% within that band, and you're at 42.2, which is pretty close to 44. So is this done monthly or weekly or
it's
quarterly or
monitored on a daily basis, and so the rebalancing is done. You know, there's no set schedule. It's not going to be done at a particular day on a particular week. It's going to be done as the opportunities arise between the buying and selling of particular assets, moving it between different managers to minimize the costs and put us back into balance. And you could have a fairly extensive discussion with Gary if you wanted to get into the actual day-to-day mechanics of how the rebalancing is done. It's a fairly elaborate system that we have. But the expectation that I have with regard to the folks in the Treasury is that they're going to be rebalancing on a regular basis in terms of not with any particular lag time attached to it.
Okay. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What is the conservative aggregate? What is the makeup of that particular?
It is a broad market fixed income fund.
It's so fixed as well?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead and continue, Mr. Burnett.
Okay, so, you know, going through that, then the income statement for the, on the right-hand side for the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund sub-account shows the 7-1 balance, and there were no additional contributions made into the sub-account after the first of this fiscal, beginning of the fiscal year. All the contributions to the sub-account were made in April. And then the income, which is a negative number, and the final balance, of just over $3,391,000,000.
And again, this was the
as of January 31st.
Right, but this was a fairly static portfolio previous to this, as far as initially set up several years before, and there was no substantial flows in or out. Is that correct, out of the sub-account?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, there was one transaction into the sub-account in, I believe, in 2000, and the next transaction into the sub-account was made in April of 2008.
Okay, thank you. And then the next table down below that, I think, Mr.
The next one just shows that if you take the whole and aggregate the sub-account and the main account of the constitutional budget reserve, what your asset allocation is between fixed income and equity investments.
And then is there an, I'm a little confused on the percentage next to it, the 68 and 72.
That's a mistake.
Should it?
I believe that, the 72 is
that
an
is
inaccurate.
That is clearly a mistake,
yeah.
a typographical error of some type.
It should be 31.11.
Right. Yeah. Senator Hoffman.
1.11.
Mr. Chairman, the just above that, under the year-to-date, so that's the loss there of $1 billion plus. That's for 12 months ending January 31st, 2009.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. No, that is for the fiscal year.
So that's the fiscal year.
Yeah. So that would be the 7 months beginning July 1.
So that year-to-date income. So that's 7 months ending January 31st.
That's correct.
And although you don't have the performance on percentage for the final 5 months, your forecast for 5 years is 7.6%.
Right.
As an average.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, yeah, that is correct. Okay. Moving down the page, the next set just shows all the contributions from to the major contributions to the Constitutional Budget Reserve account that were made between July 2007 and today. And shows whether they went to the sub-account or the main account, ultimately.
Okay. And we do have, just as a reminder, in the packet there's the CBR guidelines that are, I think they're, Mr. Commissioner, they are they updated quarterly? I see there's a July 1, 08 date, and of the sub-account and the main account. And there's...
they're reviewed quarterly and would be approved annually.
Okay. So you sign off annually and then have quarterly updates?
Correct.
Okay.
And there may be modifications during the year if...
Right. And then there's... I think there's that one little emerging 1% fund that's not on here, July 108.
No, it's referenced in the...
I don't think we need to spend much time on it. 1% in the portfolio is not going to make any difference.
Yeah, there was...
In the allocation weighting.
That was the modification.
That was the modification.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Senator Hoffman.
On the contributions and withdrawals in 2009 and this year's budget and last year's budget, we made authorizations to deposit $5.8 billion into the account. And these are the dates that allowed the cash flow to make those payments to the corpus.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the smaller amounts on here primarily are actual settlements, and even the $379 million the previous to April of 2009, of April of 2008, those are actual tax settlements that flowed in. The ones beyond there are the dates when the cash actually was transferred to the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund.
And then on April 30th, Mr. Chairman, of 08, that was a transfer of funds from the corpus to the subaccount. And were there subsequent transfers in January, or was this the total amount, and how was that amount determined?
That was the one transfer, and the amount was determined again, in consultation between myself and Deputy Commissioner Brian Andrews, in anticipating what the amount of the 2008 total deposit would be, and recognizing, and we can talk about this, the intent language that was in the budget for the money to be deposited in this account, that we made the transfer at that time to recognize that this was the total amount that was going to come in over the course of the fiscal year. And that's why the deposits that came in subsequently were basically the equivalent of that amount.
If we could reference in our packet, we've got the language for the of the bill, supplemental, and there's reference on line 3 for the 2.6 billion incorporated to the general fund, to the from the general fund, the CBR, but there is no reference in the bill for the additional billion out of the corpus. So what was there conversations with co-chairs or finance committee members or that you recall, or where did that number come from?
Well, it was generated, or? No, it was a combination. We've got the broader discussion of the purpose of the sub account being the amount, and we can talk about that from the language of the statute itself, the amount invested more aggressively for a period expected to be 5 years plus. In other words, you have a horizon of those investments so that you expect to have them in that allocation for 5 years and go with the market through that that time frame, which that meant for us in looking at the main account was that the main account was intended to be a 5 year cash flow, potential draws on the CBR. And when we looked at the current balance, we looked at the various reserve accounts that were being set up, and then historic use of the fund and the anticipated needs in the coming years, the 3+ billion that we are seeing going to be deposited within that period of time into the main account, with the additional reserves, the statutory budget reserve and other accounts, was seen as the appropriate amount to have in there for that five-year period. So the remainder went into the sub-account.
So there was no discussion with the finance committees as far as potential cash flow needs that they felt the state may or may not be walking into, or the priority order of where they may want to draw funds from?
Mr. Chair, I relied upon the interactions that Deputy Commissioner Andrews was having with the co-chairs, and I mean, we are all, I mean, unfortunately, at a situation where we don't have the availability of him to provide insight into those discussions. But the information that he provided to me was that the discussions that we were having with regard to the use of these funds was a part of the conversations he was having with the co-chairs.
I think we made it stated on the record at the last meeting we discussed this, that those conversations I had with him were not to do an excessive or increased weighting, and as I recall, there was a conversation with yourself in the hallway at least once, briefly on the subject matter, expressing non-interest, and my co-chair here will have to speak for his own conversations with the deceased member of the administration, but And I recognize there is four co-chairs, and there is two finance committees. Senator Hoffman, what discussions did you have?
I did not have any discussions with Brian Andrews on any allocations to the sub-account on how that should be made.
Okay. If we could maybe speak to the language addition, lines 6 through line 9. I think that's the area that the committee needs to take a look at and have a discussion over the next month or so and decide how we're going to modify this type of...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just for clarification, this is language that was put into the FY08 supplemental. It's not part of the statute.
Right. I understand that.
And it's not part of the current bill or budget bill. So I don't know if there is an intent to, if the direction of the conversation is to add language to the budget bill that would be of similar nature in terms of directing one way or the other. But this language, as far as needing to be modified, unless you're going to go back and, I don't think you can go back and change the 08 supplemental, but.
I think we're going to go back, well, if we could go back and change the 08 supplemental, I think we all would at the table here. There's section C in the statute, 4300. But clearly this, I understand that this is the supplemental bill language and not the statute language. But it is part of the issue of discussion here because on line 8, just the language in line 8, in a manner maximizing the long-term earnings of the fund while meeting the minimum liquidity requirements of the state, minimum liquidity requirements of the state in a savings account, I don't quite understand that language.
Mr. Chair, if I can maybe comment on that. Sure. I think that there, just to be clear, the sub-account remains entirely liquid. The funds are available at any time the state needs them. That's distinguished from the basically your investment period, the amount of risk that you're willing to take with those funds. The allocation is between equities and fixed income. And the equity market that this fund is invested in is completely liquid. It's just a matter of accepting the standard deviation of your returns and exposing them to the market for a sufficient period of time to allow you to have the expectation of receiving those returns. The language, I agree, could be considered different than what we currently use the sub-account for.
If we look at the way I read the language in line 8, and I'm not an attorney, I think some people are, the way I read that sentence, in a manner maximizing the long-term earnings of the fund while meeting the minimum liquidity requirements of the state, I read that as the liquidity requirements of the state, not the liquidity of the assets held. And there's a big difference. In other words, the need to draw on the money to meet our obligations versus an execution by a portfolio manager to liquidate a particular holding and put it in cash. They're two different things.
I understand, Mr. Chair, and I think the question that from an implementation standpoint that we're faced with is there are two accounts. There's the main account, the sub-account. The sub-account is statutory designated as the plus 5 years. The language here says maximize the long-term earnings, which given two choices means move it into the one that has the maximum return. Liquidity, I understand, could have multiple meanings, but in terms of liquidity of the state, I think the interpretation that in the context of the existence of the sub-account and the direction between the main and the sub, I think the language seems fairly clear that the minimum liquidity requirement of the state is a recognition that the sub-account is set up for 5+ years.
All right, we'll kind of disagree on some of that. There was also some conversation that came before the inclusion of this language, whether to put it in a bill or have letters sent from the co-chairs. So there were some inter-political workings on this subject matter previous to the creation of this language and insertion into this bill. Is that not correct?
My direction to Mr. Andrews was I wanted to get direction from the legislature with regard to the use of the CBR, because the other part of the conversation that we need to have is that when we are looking at the question of the allocation between the main and the sub, particularly when the issue of the sub being +5 years, it's not simply a matter of looking at the cash flow of the state. There's also a behavioral aspect of it in terms of, are we going to first go into the non-CBR funds, reserve funds, and we've set up a number of them over the last couple of years, or is the CBR going to be the fund of first draw? Historically, the CBR has been the fund of last draw. And so when you take all of the reserves that we have, and the sheet represents those, we have near almost $10 billion right now in various reserve funds. And the question for that allocation is the legislature going to go first to the CBR or last to the CBR? And so that was why that was a big part of the desire for some feedback. And my initial request from our two, Mr. Andrews, who was having the interactions, was I'd like some sort of correspondence to say, hey, this is what we'd like to see. I was told it was going to be in the form of the budget language itself. And so we waited until we saw that.
Senator Elton.
Thanks, and I kind of appreciate the history, and maybe you can expand a little bit on it, Commissioner. I mean, I guess in my experience, I haven't thought of the CBR as the fund that, you know, is the last draw. I mean, we have drawn from other funds, but I've participated in 3/4 votes on the CBR, and so maybe you can talk a little bit about, you know, what your perception of the rankings are on where we draw first, because when I heard that, there was a little bit of cognitive dissonance in my mind.
Senator Elton, through the chair, I guess I don't see it as my role to rank them. That is going to be your role. What I'm put in the position of is trying to anticipate the potential ranking. And so what I was referring to is when I look historically, the CBR is drawn upon usually when there are no other reserves available. The statutory budget reserve has, at least as far as my understanding is concerned, was at zero when we were drawing on the CBR in the past. What we were watching was the replenishment of a number of reserve accounts. Statutory budget reserve, the public education fund, the Alaska Housing Finance, a couple funds over there. And when we're looking at trying to anticipate what was the 5-year potential draw, we had to take into account what's the sequence. And so that was why I was looking for some some feedback was, are we looking at this as we're going to want to use the main account as the first stop, or are we building up these other things in order for them to be a cushion between us and getting to the sub-account? And that was part of what we were trying to anticipate and build into our thought process. And it continues today. I mean, that's part of, I think, the question that we didn't get to but was sort of raised at the last time we were here was, well, what's going to happen over the course of the coming months as we go from the draw in the 09 supplemental and the expected potential draw during 10, is that going to change the allocation between the main and the sub? And again, it becomes a reflection on where the legislature expects to go in terms of when will that fund be the one looked to, and is it going to be in that 5-year plus window, or is it coming up quicker? In which case, then we're going to have to move money from the sub back into the main. And the only issue there goes back to this issue of liquidity. It's not a question of having to get it now so that we have it. It's just a matter of recognizing that we had exposed it to that risk with a 5-year horizon. We hit the low end. Are we going to realize those losses by moving it out now, or are we going to continue exposing it to that that more risk environment?
I think we're going to talk about that. But before we go to Senator Hoffman, I just want to back up and finish that one issue of the added language in the supplemental bill. If that language wasn't in there, would there be any restrictions to you as the commissioner to allocate a heavier concentration of the CBR into the subaccount?
I don't believe so.
And that's the issue, fundamental issue that gives me indigestion as one of the co-chairs of this committee, when language like that appears in the bill when it's really not needed. And, you know, it's kind of the, you know, cover your own butt language is the way I view it. And I'm not saying you directly, I'm saying the issue at hand. And it's pretty clear from the conversation I've had with my co-chair that neither one of us, and I would venture to guess everybody sitting at this table that was here last year, and there's only one member that wasn't, Senator Ellis, I'd be very surprised if there was a lot of conversations with any of them concerning this issue.
Mr. Chair, again, it's a conversation between the legislative branch and the executive branch as it relates to this fund, and I was looking for some form of communication back in terms of what the expectations were with regard to this. The, I guess, to me, this is a perfectly reasonable way of expressing that, given that you are a body of that uses this process as your decision-making process. And rather than taking it upon the co-chairs as the ones directing, it makes perfect sense that it would be through a legislative action in terms of communicating an intent. And if the message is that the language is not as meaningful because it's in this budget bill, I don't know where that brings us to, given that I assume that if we're looking at an inverse situation and the market had gained substantially and we had failed to do this, I'd be in front of a committee explaining why we didn't follow the direction of the legislature. So
let me just add, so I don't want to get into the argumentative points because we got other things to cover, but I had conversations with the governor on the issue of the capital budget, the coming slowdown of the economy, and the need to push capital projects into the state of Alaska to help us accelerate the economy of the state through this economic slowdown. that was obviously coming, and the need to do that. So we as the state of Alaska, with the vast resources financially that we have, don't have to be impacted like the southern 48 states with an economic slowdown. Nobody saw the magnitude of the decline coming in the fall. But clearly the handwriting was on the wall last spring that we're going into a economic slowdown, possibly a recession, and the need to counter-stimulate that. Those conversations were received at, you know, how they were received. But they also played into the lack of interest that I had in reallocating a heavier concentration of the CBR into the aggressive side of it. It all plays together. Now we're going to sit here and we're going to talk about the forecast of the CBR, the length of time it's going to last, and how we're going to draw our assets down, and how we're going to try to get out of this particular situation where we have an exposure to a large portion of the CBR, so we don't get into a position where we have to be backed into it and liquidate when it's not advantageous to us to liquidate, and or scale back our capital spending, because you know, we're concerned that we may have a liquidity draw or liquidity need that extends more than a year or two. So you know, there's more that gets wrapped up in this envelope than what you know appears in just the written documents in front of us. So it is a point of agitation, at least for me. I view it clearly as an intent to go around the Senate Finance Committee, is the way I look at this language.
Senator
Senator Hoffman.
Did you want? Well, my question, I guess, is knowing that today we're going to have amendments to the 09 budget, and we don't have the specific amount of the shortfall, but it's anticipated to be, $1.2 to $1.6 billion. Say it is $1.6 billion for the remainder of this year, which ends in June 30th. That would mean that of the 6.6, we'd have $5 billion. Where would those funds be drawn from? And after that, would there be a reallocation between the corpus and the subaccount? And how would you come to that decision?
Just briefly restate that question. I was reading a note, Senator Hoffman, and I.
My question is: we know that amendments are coming, and we don't have the exact amount of the shortfall for fiscal year 09. It may be 1.2 to 1.6 billion. Say it is 1.6 billion. We have 6.6 billion in the CBR, and it remains that. And we take that 1.6 billion out over the course of the next 5 months. That would leave $5 billion. Where would the 1.6 billion come from? And would there be a reallocation between the two accounts? And how would you come to that decision?
I guess starting with the assumption that we have a shortfall of in the neighborhood 1.3 to 1.6, there's going to be legislative language that will dictate whether that comes out of the CBR, comes out of statutory budget reserve, or is going to be picked up somewhere else.
My question, I'm assuming that it comes out of the CBR.
Okay. Assuming it comes out of the CBR, then it would naturally come out of the CBR main account, because that's our first fund for, again, the sub being intended for 5 years plus. With regard to a potential reallocation, that's going to come into a calculus of many different things. We're going to be, again, looking for some guidance, direction, intention from the legislature in terms of expectations going forward? Is the CBR going to continue to be the primary account of future withdrawals? We're going to be looking at the 2010 budget and the expected draw coming out of that. And again, you know, factoring in what's the expectation of how this interacts with those other accounts, then you start moving into the revenue projections and when where are things looking in terms of post 2010. So the short answer is that a reallocation is possible, but it's not absolute. It's going to depend on a number of factors, of which the legislature will have a role in providing us with direction and input in terms of, again, the use of the various reserve accounts. And just commenting back on the interaction with regard to this statutory language, I can appreciate that individual legislators, and I don't know where to put the issue with the co-chairs, being having a different view than what is in this budget, but this is the budget that was passed. This is the direction that we got from the legislature, and I don't know what to do precisely with a message that is, yes, this was passed by us, but we wanted something different. We have to have direction. We have to know that the direction that is provided by the legislature is truly in the intent of the legislature. We have to believe it, and we follow it. And so it's difficult to be put in a position where, yes, this is what we passed, this is what was included, but we meant something different.
Just let me remind you, Mr. Commissioner, line 3 on section 33 of the supplemental bill was $2.6 billion, which is a different number than 4.1. So let's make sure we understand what we're talking about. There's the intent language, or the language in the supplemental bill that some of us have agitation with, indigestion with, because of some issues relating to it. Then there's another issue of the amount above $2.6 billion, which isn't reflected anywhere in that.
Okay, so that's a helpful clarification. Thank you.
Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Commissioner. These are always difficult conversations, especially for me when I'm trying to catch up on issues that I'm not as familiar with as the co-chairs are. But Co-Chair Hoffman asked a question that was similar to the one I was going to ask. I mean, if you take a look at the language, it is the intent of the legislature. I mean, we've been talking about that as being permissive in making deposits to the subaccount, and there are different ways of interpreting that, and I think we've gotten to some of them. But it also seems to me that this language is permissive that allows you to move money out of the subaccount and back to the corpus. And you have talked an awful lot about, you know, communicating with co-chairs of the two finance committees about how much should go into the subaccount. I mean, I'm assuming that both accounts are fairly actively managed. I'm assuming that somebody at some point in time in the early fall may have said, now wait a minute. I mean, just like individual investors, I mean, I was behind the curve on this as an individual investor, but I don't actively manage my accounts, that somebody might have said, are we over-allocated to long-term, higher risk investments, and should we move money back out? So I guess the question is, after that long prelude, the question is, did you consider getting in touch with the co-chairs of both finance committees about reallocating back out of an account that was potentially much higher risk given the evolving economic situation?
I guess the short answer is no, and the reason is that again, if you look at the totality of our reserve accounts, and you look at the expectation that the sub-account is the plus 5 years. Given our current expectations, we can make it 5 years before we would need to get to this account. And the from an investment standpoint, it is not a very disciplined or successful investment strategy to put your money into a particular investment strategy that's got a 5-year horizon, and then if you have significant losses in the first 6 months, immediately move it out. You've basically left yourself in a situation where you have losses that you'll never recover. So the primary question becomes not so much the investment performance of that account as did things change so dramatically on our budget expectations that we had reason to believe that these funds were going to be needed sometime sooner than the 5 years. And frankly, at that point, we will have to make a decision, but we're not there yet, because until we get a clearer picture from probably this budget cycle in terms of the interaction of the legislature's recognition that we have shortfalls and where are we going to draw those from, then I'm not expecting to change our expectation that these funds are 5 years plus at this point.
If I could follow up.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I understand that, you know, when you have a long-term investment strategy that you don't necessarily make decisions, you know, based on a 5-month imperative. I understand that. But it just seems to me that, you know, if others, including individuals, are saying, okay, I'm taking my money out of Apple and I'm putting it in government bonds. If others are doing it, I mean, and especially given kind of the evolving nature of this with the housing crises and, you know, what's happening in Detroit, it would seem to me that at some point you have to say, okay, are we over invested in one component of the portfolio or not? Everybody else does that, and so I guess I don't fully understand. Especially given the discussion that we've had around the table here recently about how quickly we may be draining down our reserves. I guess I would have expected that your answer would have been that, maybe we have to relook at the way we've got the two accounts invested.
And before you answer, let me put a little finer point on that. We're looking at maybe $1.2-1.3 billion, 409. I guess we're gonna have a revised number in the red, some magnitude. At $50 a barrel, we're looking here at the table of about $2 billion. And I don't know what the oil is going to be in FY10, but if it is 50, you got $2 billion next year and $1.3 billion this year. The conservative side of the CBR is wiped out. It's gone.
Again, assuming that is the fund that you move to first, I mean, that's part of the calculus. That's part of the and part of the difficulty is that the, for lack of a better word, the decision making on this is somewhat lumpy. We have to go a certain amount of time and interactions to get the response from the legislature in terms of the use of these funds, the use of the variety of funds. What is the expectation of when each of those pots is going to be accessed? And I think getting to your point, yes, you make decisions continually with regard to assessing your needs, liquidity, when you're going to need the funds, and watching your allocation between, and most likely you would have set, this is, you know, if you look at we on the ARM board side, you would set a particular target, 20 years, and then you'd ride it out. The fact the markets have changed wouldn't necessarily change your 20-year horizon. But if suddenly your career choice changes and now you're looking at wanting to retire in 10 years, then you would change your asset allocation. And the question for us is, given the change in the revenue expectations of the state, that's the significant driver here from my point of view in terms of the need to reallocate. Given the revenue changes, is the state's reserve needs, have they changed to the point where these are no longer 5-year plus assets? And as I said before, we haven't reached that point yet. But one of the significant assumptions in there is that historically, again, that account would be expected to be the last reserve hit. Now, if that has changed, then we would have to reassess the amount that would be put into that account.
Mr. Chair, I mean, Commissioner, I understand what you're saying. I mean, but there's, we had a presentation at this table that said all accounts could be depleted by FY14. And clearly, that is a 5-year forecast. And so it seems to me that if we have somebody, it doesn't matter what account you draw from first, if they're saying, Mr. Thiel has said, if I remember correctly, Mr. Chair, is that all the accounts are gone by 2014, you know, if we make certain assumptions,
that's
safe assumptions. And it would appear to me that you don't want to be up in the high, when you're making projections, you want to be as conservative as possible. And so for me, I can't get over, you know, this 5-year deal when all accounts could be gone, you know, before then.
And Senator, I appreciate that, and that is a part of what, again, it goes, we're focusing on the right thing, from my opinion. We're focusing on when were we going to need the funds. But the thing to, I guess, keep in mind is that while we talk about this, you know, 5 years and out, that is not putting in a lockbox for 5 years, and we only can access it every once in a while. It's not like CDs that we're setting up. It's continually available. It's just a question of, from an investment standpoint, what is your expectation for the funds? And so from that vantage point, you can have projections that are within the band of reasonableness that have us running out of money in a much shorter time than 2014. But we have the opportunity of time. We are at, in other words, we can continue to monitor the situation and continue to make decisions in terms of that at allocation as experience provides us with a better picture of the future. We're at, and I'll go back into the discussion of the revenue projection. We're at a particularly volatile time. We have a particularly difficult time, anybody, predicting the future, both global economy and oil prices. And so as we move through this period of time, both in terms of this budgeting cycle and in terms of the global situation, we'll have a much clearer picture 3 months from now than we do today. But your initial question that started this was there a point in the fall when we reached a point where we should have said, hey, we got to change this? And my answer is no, we didn't reach that. But could we potentially reach it in the near future? Sure. There are a lot of things that could happen that would cause us to want to do that. But what I'm trying to explain, I guess, is the things that are going to factor into when I think that's a timely decision. And a big part of that's going to be what we see and get from the legislature in terms of the expectations of these reserve accounts. recognizing that we're all going through this, you know, to a certain extent, for the first time, having the full spectrum of reserve accounts available to us at a time when we're entering a difficult budget cycle. And so we can't go back and say, well, you know, 15 previous times we went in this sequence. We don't have that kind of history. So it's going to be a matter of continuing the interaction so that we, as the folks who are making this investment decision, know what your expectations are in terms of where the cash flow is going to come from.
Just for a point of clarification for the people watching at home, generally speaking, the last reserve account or fallback position that the legislature is going to go to is the permanent fund. It's going to be the earnings reserve. It won't be the CBR. And the permanent fund has substantial losses in there, and testimony the other day was about $3 million in the earnings reserve before you wash the losses into it. So we don't have the ability that we would normally rely on as a stopgap. Is it, do you think it's off point?
No. There was just a comment on continue.
I mean, that's, as I recall, a testimony the other day on the permanent fund, because we asked a question to Ledge Finance and ballpark figures of their earnings reserve and the magnitude, and we could put a finer point on the earnings reserve and actually flush out if we're dealing with net or what we're actually dealing with. But clearly the permanent fund is the last resort, not the CBR. We have created a billion-dollar forward funding in education. I think there'll be a high reluctance to liquidate out our K-12 forward funding in education before we take a good hard look at liquidating out the CBR, the vast majority of it. And then we've got the SBR with $1 billion in it. That takes a simple majority vote, which if we do need most of the liquid side of the, or the main account of the CBR in this, this session, we're going to be looking at giving you authority to access it and plan on a likelihood of it being liquidated. That leaves us about $1 billion in the SBR before we have to start making some decisions that none of us would really like to make, being backed into this sub-account or going elsewhere. So we don't have a lot of options. And we're already looking forward to which ones we're going to execute first as far as the decision process. Now, when we look at the revenue forecast that came out, there's a table in there on the life of the CBR using the data that was used at the time when the revenue forecast, and at $60 a barrel, CBR life was expected to be about 2014. If you go to $50 a barrel, that's June of 14. It goes down to June of 13, so it's a year difference. I can pass it down the table. Page 15.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at the difference between a $50 and a $60 barrel, we're looking at a 12-month spread according to the revenue source book. So I guess the message is, you know, we're going to be engaged here in that discussion of how long the CBR is going to last and how we're going to liquidate our assets to facilitate our needs in the event that we need to. And it would be nice if we work with the Department of Revenue hand in hand on some orderly process.
And we agree.
Now, the earlier question that Senator Hoffman had that was answered because we ran out of time was the forecast earnings used in the CBR for FY09 and FY10. Was that correct?
Yes.
You were asking about the earnings projections, and there are they going to be restated?
Well, they're Mr. Chair, the way that the budgeting is done is the as you see, performance forecast, the top of the page that we handed out, has a different amount for the main account and the sub-account. Similarly, there's performance forecasts for the various other sub-funds. And so the way that the budgeting works is from the point where you go from experience to projection, you project with these numbers as the projection, because the best we've got. As we move forward, you end up moving additional experience in and forecast out. And so it's adjusted as we move forward.
Mr. Chair, I think your staff asked me to provide the committee with an update with the forecast and actual year-to-date for each of the funds that we project earnings for, and that should be to your office this afternoon.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Senator Hoffman?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Do we have any other? Senator Huggins.
Yeah.
You've been awful quiet today, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you know, I guess to say I'm disappointed would be an understatement. And I'll just speak for what I think my neighbors would say today. That, and Commissioner, I would ask you to take note of this. If you have a question about the investment strategy or what you think the legislature needs, put it in writing so that it's above board. All Alaskans know about it, because my concern is very simple, is that Mr. Andrews isn't here. I know I wasn't involved in any conversations. I hear the co-chairs say they weren't involved in conversations. And I know that those Alaskans that are listening, particularly my neighbors, they will become skeptics or more skeptical than they are about what we do down here in this building. This, you know, it's, and to look at some language that somehow got into our process to make it sort of official is a technique, but it's a bad one. And I'm not saying you put the language in there. Somebody did, but I was never involved in that conversation. So my point to you is, if you have a question about what you want this committee to do, I want to be involved in the conversation. And if you put in a writing, I can reflect on it. It has nothing to do with Mr. Andrews, and the history of conversation has everything to do with documentation. The same reason we do written bills, not verbal bills. So I on behalf of my constituents and my neighbors, I say let's a question, a point that has this order of magnitude, because it's billions of dollars that are floating around out there, and we've lost a double handful of dollars, something over a billion, that I think Alaskans deserve better. And it's my intent to make sure that they get better. And so I would ask your cooperation in that.
Senator Huggins, you have that. And I think what this is a product of a number of things, one of which is the fact that the decision on allocation between the main and the sub-account is statutorily rested solely with the commissioner. The question that I had, and that continues to be the question, I think, of the day and the part of the conversation, is to what extent is the legislature properly involved in that decision-making process? I recognize that this method of involvement is one that has proved troubling, given the nature of our conversation. But I think the question becomes, what is the nature of that involvement? Because as we move forward, there's going to need to be continual interaction. And I think we're going to both be striving at the appropriate way to have that. Because I don't think that, at least I'd have to think about it, whether we want to have the legislature on an annual basis directing the allocation in any particular way. There's going to remain a certain amount of discretion in the commissioner. It's just a matter of how much feedback to get from the legislature and in what form. And I think we just need to continue to move to improve on that.
Don't underestimate the sensitivity of a $1 billion loss and the interest that the Finance Committee is going to have in exercising its legislative authority from whatever corners we may have to protect the Treasury. Senator Thomas and then Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand the situation, or at least as I look back at it, you know, oil prices were rising, things looked good, we were putting money aside. May not have been any great concerns, some looking at that particular situation, but as I look at actually the forecast, performance forecast of the corpus and the sub-account, and I look at the capital markets page from the Callan and Associates, it appears that, and I'm not exactly sure what all the investments were made, but it appears to me that, you know, we're talking about not inflation adjusted, but just as they are, 12-13% in large cap U.S. and small cap U.S. is even larger, doubling almost the performance forecast. So I don't know how much money. And then I look down at the domestic equity and the international equities, the actual of the subaccount, and I wonder, or curious, I guess, about that huge difference in expected or performance forecast and where actually the money went, looking obviously at the 5 years leading up, you know, 2003 to 2007 out of this book anyhow, just giving us a snapshot in time. It changed dramatically when 2008 is stuck in it, but, and like I said, you can always, it's always easy to look back 8 months later and decide whether you had a wise decision or not when you made it. But the concern, I guess, if I can maybe refine it a little bit, is the expectation or the performance forecast of 7.6%, yet 60% of the money was put in domestic and international equities, which prior to that point in time had been almost double that in returns, actual returns over a five-year period of time. And why, if our expectation was 7.5%, we would have moved so much money into those stocks, and it was stocks rather than in some maybe bond funds that were a little more protected and would have satisfied the performance forecast. Because the same chart that I'm looking at in this also shows, you know, in the 7% range for some bonds.
I guess the short answer is that the performance forecast for the various classes does not meet the near-term historic returns. They're just inherently different, and because the performance is based upon both a longer-term history and then projecting forward, and so the performance forecast, the 7.61, is the blend of the, you know, if you take the Callan documents that you have and you flip forward to what they would provide as their forecast of the various asset classes, it would provide probably the closer mark to where the 7.61 comes from, as opposed to comparing a five-year return chart for those asset classes with this number, because that's not going to match up. I think the root of the question may go to, was there a different allocation between equities and fixed that would have returned the same amount without the same amount of risk?
Correct. That's the short of it. You know, if you're looking at a five-year time frame for the money to potentially being used or available, looking at the statute, that, and I realize you had a lot to look at. You could take a 50-year look at it or whatever. You know.
And briefly, if you could briefly, you know, we're running out of time, and Senator Hoffman has a question.
Okay. I guess the short answer is no, and the reason is that your risk return trade-off is, you know, we try to maximize our return with minimizing our risk. If there was an asset allocation that would provide a similar target return with less risk, we would have taken it. I mean, that's just the efficient frontier theory and all that kind of stuff. While it may appear when looking at actual returns and trying to figure out if we knew this, then we would have done this now, that you would have ended up with a different mix. This mix is based upon the forward projected returns.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a statement, I guess. It was, you know, Senator Ellis and I were here in the legislature when the Constitutional Budget Reserve was first discussed. In fact, I was chairman of the Senate, the House Finance Committee, when this legislation or the proposed constitutional amendment was adopted. And I think it's it has been very helpful, and I would like to say that the concept of this budget was one that was initiated by the legislature, not by the administration. And I think it may be time to look at the statute today and reevaluate how the two accounts work. And I think that the dialogue we're having today is a good one. But it is very important, given that our one of our goals is to stretch the savings account out as far as possible. And in order to accomplish that, we need to be cognizant of the decisions that are being made on how these funds are invested.
Any final questions from the team? Just one quick thing. It's more important return of your money than return on it. This meeting's adjourned.